We're up to the final chapter in Sefer Vayikra, chapter 27. It's a short book, relatively, the shortest books of all the five books. And this final chapter comes after the end, which, as we discussed, is a kind of structure that is kind of common in Sefer Vayikra. There's an end, as we saw. We ended also with the whole Schar Va'Onesh of B'chakoisai. And now there's one more parsha. It's one parsha with many parts, but one parsha of laws. And these are laws of people who dedicate some kind of gift. There's different kinds of gifts, but some kind of gift to Lashem, which means to functionally to the Mikdash or to the Kihanim. So it's curious that this should be, number one, appearing after the end, so to speak, and number two, that this should be the final thing. We might see it as somehow a continuation of the discussion of the laws of land, of who things belong to, that we had right before the Imbechakosa. We had this discussion of how land returns in Shemitah and Yovel and all of that. And now we have sort of the more voluntary side of that, right? What the Dachs of Yovel are about how all land is in some sense belongs to Hashem, and we can only use it for a certain amount of time, and therefore also it belongs to each person, his Yerusha, his inheritance belongs to him, it goes back in Yovel, all of those laws. Now we have really a discussion of the Kehanim. Now we will recall that Kehanim don't have their own land. In other words, the Kedusha, the Hekdesh, doesn't own any permanent land, except for the place where the Beis Mikdash was built and so on, and the cities of the Levim. Those things are not mentioned right here, or not mentioned explicitly at all in this book. So what we have is really like the voluntary donations of people giving their land to the Mikdash, or donations. And maybe that's the way in which it completes the discussion of land before. We'll see there's explicitly discussion of Yovel, how it interacts with these laws and so on. And it seems like that's an important part, the regulation not only of people buying and selling land between themselves, but also the regulation of how donations to the Kehanim or to the Mikdash work. So that's the context, but it still needs some kind of explanation of why this should be the last chapter and why this should come after the Mechakoisai. I don't have a good explanation for that right now. So now what we have is like this. We have various ways in which a person can do a donation, can dedicate something to Lashem, to the Mikdash and the Kehanim. And as we'll see, it seems like most of these donations, their goal isn't to donate the thing itself. So in other words, we'll talk about three major categories, and within them, different categories of donations. There's category of donating people, donate yourself or someone else, things like that. There's a category of donating land, and there's a category of donating animals. Those are the three main categories of possessions, right? Humans, as in the sense of slaves, can be possessions, but also in some sense a person belongs to himself, his family. You can donate that. And then there's land and animals, known in general in halacha as karka, or nichsi deloy naidi, right? Not land, unmovable possessions, and metaltlin, which mostly are animals that move. Now, as we can see, in all of these three categories, the goal usually here is not that the Kodesh, not the Kohen or the Mikdash, should have these possessions. It usually almost always gets transferred into money. Unless when we literally bring a carbon, of course, then the Kodesh gets literally the animal. But this parsha is mostly not talking about that. It's mentioned in some way, slightly, and there's maybe a discussion what it means. But in general, this is all about the kind where you do donate something, but we understand that what the Kurdish gets out of it is the value of it, the monetary value of it, and there's different ways of converting the thing that you want to dedicate with money. Now, of course, you can ask, if the point is to give money, why don't we just give money directly? Well, firstly, money is not the main category of possessions in the Torah. When we get to Sefer Dvarim, we get a little more about money being a category, but specifically, for sure, in the first four books, mostly we talk about possessions themselves. Money is just a representation of that. And secondly, it seems like there's a point in that. Someone wants to be Makdash himself or his son or something to the Mikdash. He doesn't want to give money. We give money in some kind of way of in exchange for that, but the value, the meaning of the money is still that it's in exchange for that. So that's the basic idea of all of these, for the most part. Now, another important basic distinction that we have in this chapter is between things in which you donate the value of the thing itself. In other words, now what will happen, as the Pesuk says each time, is that the Kohen will evaluate it. He's going to be the appraiser. There are halachos that discuss in more in detail how this appraisal will work, but basically the Kohen has the right, or the Kohuna, the Kehanim in general, have the right to do the appraisal, and therefore they will get the amount of money that they appraise it for. And then there's other, that's one way of doing the law. Then there's another category, which is set prices. So certain things, as we'll see, specifically humans and specifically certain fields, have set prices. So these are like formalities, formalizations of how much this person is worth, how much this thing is worth, and that's the amount of money that you will have to give. It's not a market worth. It's a kind of, just like we have, for example, the donation of machtsa shekel, which is a set amount. There's an ideal of having, just like Sefer Vayikra likes, having everything in set amounts, have a lot of clarity. So these are set amounts. Of course, they have some relation to the market value. They're not like entirely disconnected. They're not floating in the air, these valuations. But the point of them is that they're set. It's like the set price. So that's the first parsha. And the first parsha is what we usually call Erechin. But really, I think the language Erechin here refers to almost all of them. But in any case, the first parsha is if someone makes an edek, yafli nedek, yafli is just the language for the verb of making an edek. The verb of making an edek in the Torah is called hafla, which means something like setting apart or declaring something to be separate. And you want to give nefeshes. Nefeshes is literal meaning souls, living things, living people specifically here. Then what we get is categories based on age and based on gender. So, and the way I've organized it is, you can see that the pasuk is working first with age. It gives each age, and then within the age, for the genders within that age, how much money the erech is. Although it's not presented explicitly that way in the pasuk, that's how it's organized. You can see the parsha is organized that way. So we see number one and the first age. Now the way the ages go also is not in this order of age. It doesn't work from 0 to 100. It works from the primary ages and then the ages around them. So the primary age, in other words, the ideal human being, the ideal age of a person is between 20 and 60. Those are the ages in which he's complete. He's not too young and not too old. Not what's called the sometimes imei amida, the standing ages. You're not growing and you're not declining. And then a male is 50 shekel, and a female is 30 shekel. That's the erech for that age. Now, we have the age before that. Now, that age before that gets divided into two levels. There's an age from 5 to 20, so he's like a child, until you're 20, you're a child in this formulation. It's very interesting. There's different ways of describing who is, which age you're a child, which age you become a man, which age you become too old, and so on. So for this purposes, a child is until from 5 to 20, so up to 5 is really small, but from 5 is already, there's something to talk to. And until 20, then we have a male is 20 shekel and a female is 10 shekel. Then, from 1 month until 5 years, that's the smallest level, so less than a month doesn't count at all, it wasn't born yet. But from 1 month to 5 years, then a male is 5 shekel and a female is 3 shekels. So those are the three ages. First, the main age from 20 to 60, and two levels before that to pre-adult levels. And then there's a post-adult level from 60 and on. Then male is 15 shekel and female is 10 shekel. So those are the four categories of ages, and with their set prices for how much you have to pay. And now we have one more thing, although in their set prices here, just like we had earlier, all the way in the beginning, different things, in which if you're too poor, if you cannot afford it, then the Kohen will evaluate how much you can afford, and that's how much you will have to give. Okay, so that's the law of a human. Now, what if an animal? So the way it works with an animal is, and there's different readings of this psukim, the halacha is, I'm not sure, entirely conforms with the simple reading, but I'll say what it says, and then you could find out what the halacha says about this in a different place. We're working from living things, so after humans, there's animals. An animal, there's really two ways of dedicating it. One is, you give an animal for a carbon, right? It can be sacrificed. It doesn't say here. The important thing that this pasuk adds is, since we're referring, we here we're speaking of someone who gives the animal, and the point of his giving is that the value of the animal should be for the Kohen or for the Mikdash or something like that. So the important law added here is that you cannot exchange it. As we'll see later, some things can be exchanged. But here you cannot exchange it. So you don't exchange one behemoth. You say, well, I have a better one or a worse one. You do not exchange it. You have to, if they do exchange it, sort of the punishment or the result of that will be that both become Kodesh. You don't gain the one that you exchanged. You have to give both. And obviously, although it says, you can't exchange even a bad one for a good one, probably the reason for this law is that we don't trust the person. I will see later when there's different ways and we see that we don't trust the person. So since you want to give an animal, you have to give it. You're not going to come up later with excuses. Well, I meant a different one. And usually, you know, sometimes it's subjective. Sometimes what you think is better is worse and so on. So the law is you're stuck with that one and you can't change it. Now, that is like an animal that you can be a carbon. So it's called behemah. Now, the opposite is behemoth tmeya. Of course, it's interesting. By the way, the place where this kind of duality exists first is in Parshas Noach, right? There's an animal that can be a carbon can brought, and then there's a tmeya animal that you can bring a carbon from. Now, it's not clear. Like, there might be animals that are not tmeya, but we don't bring carbons from. Okay? Anyways, then what happens is that the coin will tell you we have to give the value. So you don't give, we can't bring a carbon, but he will evaluate it, and you will give the value of the coin. And here also it says, ben toiv ben ra. It's sort of to correspond to the toiv berai, rabbi toiv of that, although it's not clear. The point is, again, that's why I'm saying that the reason for temura being osa ben toiv berai is because we don't trust the person. Same here, what he's saying is, you accept the coin's evaluation, whether you think it's good or bad, and then the im goyli golena. Now, if the person, now what happens, well, the way this works is that the coin takes the animal and he sells it, which would be called geula. So someone else sort of pays him for it, and you will have to pay how much the coin demands. So it seems like when you get it from the coin, it's not like the coin puts it on the market. It's that he sets a price, and then someone pays that price, and that's how you do your donation. If the person himself wants to take it, so in other words, he's going to say, I'm giving this to you and I'm going to give you money, then he has to add a fifth. And that's, I think, also part of this sort of not trusting the person. Like, if you're going to do it yourself, you might make some kind of deal with the coin to make a smaller evaluation. So you have to add 20% to if you do it yourself. Okay, so that's the law of what's called erech, when you give a living thing. Now we're moving to houses and fields. This is corresponds to the laws of houses and fields that we learned in the beginning of Parshas Bahar, which is how the real estate market is supposed to work. So now we have these three categories, we'll see. There's three categories. There's houses. Over there we had more categories. There's different kinds of houses. Here there's three houses. If you're makdish your house, you say you will give your house, right? Which means the value of the house because it's going to be sold or you will redeem it. So again, the coin gets the right to evaluate it. If you redeem it yourself, you have to add a fifth, 20%. If you give a field, now fields, there's two kinds of fields. There's a field tzedech, your inheritance, the field that belongs to you, to your family. Then this field, besides for a person who has this erech, set erech, a certain amount that you have to pay for it, a field also has a set amount, not market value each time separate, again, to decide. There's a separate set amount, which is zera choymer so'irim achmishim sechel kesef. Every field who can do a choymer so'irim, which is an amount of barley, is worth 50 shekel. That's how it works. Now, you remember that fields have this law of yovel. So whenever someone dedicates a field to Hekdesh, even Hekdesh, so to speak, in the first law over here, also only gets it until Yovel. So the amount that they give is not Zerach HaMas from 1 year. It's as many years as are left until Yovel. It's not forever, not 1 year, but as many years as left until Yovel. So if it's after from Yovel, then it's the entire amount from 50 years. If it's less years left in Yovel, then that's the amount of you have to get. And the same thing, if you redeem it yourself, you have to add a 20%. Now, if not, or if it's sold to someone else, right? Now, the Hekdesh, remember, either sells it or you sell someone else, or you sell it back to the owner, which is called Gola. The owner sells it again. Then, he cannot redeem it. It will go back, by Yovel, it will go back to the coin. It will not go back to the original owner. It will go back to the coin if he sells it to someone else. That's the law. So this is one way in which the coin can gain property, it seems, or the kahuna, wherever that is. Now that's the law of a sdeh chuza, a field that belongs, that is your family. So in other words, by yovel, it would go either back to you, and therefore we only pay you for that amount, or if it's sold to someone else, it will go to that person, and then it will revert to the kain If you makdish a field that you've bought, in other words, you bought it for someone else, it will go back to them for yovel, right? So then again, he will count. You will give the value of this would be the value that is the value for you until yovel. But when it's rent and yovel, it won't return to the kohen as the person who gives his own field, because then he's dedicating past yovel. But it will go back to whoever you bought it from, because the fact that you will give it to hekdesh doesn't preclude the law of yovel that everything goes back to the original steachos. Now there's one law, all these erechin are with shekel HaKodesh. Apparently there's different ways of counting a shekel. We already had this in Kisisa. A shekel HaKodesh is 20 geira, which is an amount of silver, apparently. That's what a shekel is. Okay, so that's all the laws, all the kinds of hekdesh. Now we have a few more kinds. One is a bechor, and these are similar things, although some of them are not voluntary. A bechor, it says, lo yakdesh ish oisai. A bechor, you don't have to make it. That means a bechor is already kodesh, so we have to be paid it or not, or give it to the coin, whichever one. But you cannot not be. It's not a question of if you are makdish, it's anyways kodesh. Although we learn in another place that we have it's a mitzvah to say that it's kodesh. So bechoy behemet ha'ira, right? If it doesn't have a mum, it goes to the coin. If it's a behemet ha'ira, then again you can be paid it, but you have to add a 20%. If the same person, otherwise it's sold to someone else, and the other person doesn't have to add 20%, right? Now achayra. There's different law. Chayrim is, apparently, when you do give the field itself to the Kohen. I think that's the difference between Chayrim and Hekdesh. Hekdesh is the point, is the value. Chayrim, when you give the field itself, that's why it's Chayrim. It's like you entirely putting it away from yourself and give it to them, both. And from these three categories, right? Adam, Behemoth, Techiz, all of them. So they're not sold. That goes Kodesh, Kodesh, Lashem. There's a debate if Lashem means for the Kohen, or for the Kabbayas, for the Mikdash. But in any case, it's entirely to the to the coin. It's not something that's not a market thing. This is not the value. That's the difference between Chayrim and Hektish or Erech that we discussed before. And now there's a difficult pasuk that says if it's a Adam, Kol Chayrim Hashechem Adam, Lo Yepodem, Mois Simos, should be killed. So again, we understand that, like the way it seems to be to say is that in general, that if you are, how do you call it, your Machrim Soda, then the Hektish gets it. It can't be bought back. Same thing if you get makdish a person. That means that he will have to die. But what will a person have to die? So this is not a clear halacha. Of course, we know that the language of chayrim is also, for example, by the Sheva Ammim. It's called chayrim, Shia Benin. Maybe they're really saying that people that deserve chayrim also, you cannot buy themselves out for money. There's different interpretations. Chazal have a different interpretation. I'm just trying to show you the flow of the pasuk, which what it seems to mean in this context. Now, another thing that is also loy, we don't have to be magdish, is maser, just the bechor maser. These are the two things that are automatically, right? So just like we said in the beginning, these two categories, right? There are things that are like defined, that are obligatory, and then there's voluntary things. Bechor and maser are the obligatory things that sort of correspond to erech and hegdish, which are the voluntary ones, right? So maser, there's two kinds of maser. The maser from the field, from the things that grow, they're a kodesh. And again, if you redeem it, you have to add a chaymesh. If the person redeems it himself, also can be redeemed, but you have to add a chaymesh. Same thing, maser from an animal, then it has the same laws, just like your makdish an animal. Firstly, we have an interesting description of like the practice of how to do the maser. Whoever passes through the shevet, the stick, sort of, that they count 1, 2, 3, the 10th is Kodesh Lashem. And here also, you can't exchange it. So similar to when you makdish a behemah, you can't exchange it after. Here, it's not your decision at all. You count 1 to 10, and then doesn't exchange. And if you do exchange, then both are Kodesh, again, for the same reason as we discussed. And that's the last law. And now we have another ending for the whole book. Eileh mitzvahs ashtiva Hashem es Moshe l'bnei Yisrael bar Sinai. These are the mitzvahs. And this was the last mitzvah. And this is the end of the book of Vayikra.